fighting for America.
Rooting out a cancer like ISIL won't be easy and it won't be quick. But tyrants and murderers before them should recognize that kind of hateful vision ultimately is no match for the strength and hopes of people who stand together.
Fighting for Idaho.
We will kickstart our economy. We will reform K-12 education, and we will get Arizona out from underneath the thumb of our federal government.
Fighting for you.
It's that time of year for the Spirit of Boise Balloon Classic. Our friend Scott Spencer with us.
It's an iconic community tradition, and I'm so pleased that my guys are all involved in it. I get very excited about it.
Boise's Mr. Wright, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller with you. We're joined by our great friend Wayne DeZubak with us. Of course, we know Wayne, who has covered sports in this area for years. Wayne, good to have you with us.
Well, good to be here, Kevin. I tell you what, it's game day. What more can you say, huh?
It is game day indeed. Your thoughts on what we should look forward to tonight?
Well, I tell you, it's going to be kind of interesting to see if Boise State gets its swagger back, because that's what Brian Harsin said he wanted to do, is come in here and get the swagger back. And, you know, it's always tough when you're playing an SEC team. This may be the third or fourth best SEC team in the league, but the bottom line is they're still SEC. I think the one advantage Boise State has is it's at the Georgia Dome. It's not an Ole Miss. It's kind of a neutral field, and even though it's down south, that's a big difference to play there. Boise State's won there, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, exactly what they do, what the offense is, because Brian has really kept the door shut on practice. He hasn't really let anybody know, and then he was very vanilla in the one open scrimmage they had to the public. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Well, you remember Brian Harsin from Capitol High School, from his time here as a player, as a assistant, leaving for Texas, Arkansas State now back here. You have the cover of the Statesman today, Wayne, here at 580KIDO, saying that, you know, Harsin's living his dream. What are your thoughts, having seen this young man as a young man and kind of, you know, not... you know, as an adult now, as a professional, at the top of his game.
Yeah, Brian was playing for Capitol, I called a lot of those games on radio and did some stuff on TV. So I've known Brian for a long time. He's best friends with my neighbor. So, you know, it really has been a pretty close relationship with Brian. But he is living his dream. He wanted to come back here. And I read that article this morning in the paper, and it's true. He had to leave Boise State to get back to Boise State. Sometimes you have to do that in life. Leave someplace you love to get back to that same place you love to get the experience you need so that you can qualify for it. And that's what he did. He's had a lot of experience when he was down at Texas. Mac Brown, what a great coach he is. And I know he came under some criticism because Texas has suffered a little bit the last couple of years. But Mack Brown, one of the all-time great coaches in college football. And certainly Brian Harsin had the opportunity to learn under the best and learn what it's like to play in that league. Going up against the teams Texas has to play week in and week out, you learn a lot about what good talent is, who to look for, who to recruit. And I've been nothing but impressed with the way Brian Harsin has come in here and just so focused.
Right. How is he different from Coach Pete?
You know, right now, I don't know that he's a little bit more open in some ways and a little bit more closed in others. It's interesting that he's closed a lot of practices, which Coach Pete did not do. But then again, you got to remember, this is his first year as head coach, okay, at Boise State. He's putting in, I won't say a new offense, I think he's reinstituting a lot of the motion and a lot of the other things that people had come to be, you know, accustomed to at Boise State, but also the no-huddle offense and a lot of different little nuances that he brought with him and that Mike Sanford brought with him from Stanford. So I think there's a reason why he's been kind of closed door, if you will, more so than Pete. But the reality is he's let the kids now, and I guess Coach Pete has done this too. Coach Pete cut off the Twitter accounts at Boise State, and now he's doing that at Washington. He's allowing them to have Twitter, just be smart about it. But he's always been open. Brian Harsin's been open about that and pretty much let the players say what they want to say.
Wayne DeZubak with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. You know, go back to last year and how Coach Pete with Coach Prince really got away from, it seemed to me, the Boise State offense. Initially, we didn't see a lot of motion. It was that veer option thing that a lot of people were running. How do you think what we'll see tonight from Coach Harsin? What type of offense? Because everybody here you know, from 07 on or even before that, is an expert in the Boise State Broncos offense, if you will.
You're going to see, obviously, they're going to have to try and establish the run. They've got a great running back in Jay Ajayi. They've got some good backups, too, as well. So they've got to get out there and establish the run. But I think you're going to see a more vertical. You're going to see a lot of motion. You're going to see a lot of the old Boise State stuff. Shane Williams-Rhodes last year, he caught 77 passes, and most of them were behind the line of scrimmage when he caught them, and then he tried to, you know, make up some ground. I think you're going to see Shane Williams-Rhodes use his speed, and he's a small guy, but use his speed and his quickness to get free vertical and down the field a little bit more. You know, the other thing is Grant Hedrick right now, he's had a nice season under his belt. This is the first season opening start he's ever going to get. I mean, this is his first season opening start. So he may be a little bit nervous, but I think you've got a veteran quarterback now who knows the system, feels confident going in there, has been down to the Georgia Dome, albeit on the sidelines, but has been in that facility before in a big game against Georgia, knows exactly what to expect. You know, you're going to have the butterflies. You always do. As long as I played college football, I sure had butterflies before every game. But you're not going to be, you know, overwhelmed.
Right, but objectively, and you know, you have a lot of people picking the Broncos and such tonight. Let's take a look at Ole Miss. What should we look for? And again, we don't all have to be, you know, as knowledgeable about sports as you are, but we're all going to be watching that game tonight on ESPN. So based on your experience and stuff, what should we, the casual fan, be looking for from Ole Miss? I hear from a lot of folks that they're fairly big.
They're big. Well, they're in the SEC. And being a big team and being in the SEC, because you play against, you know, when you're in the SEC, you just beat up on each other day after day, week after week. And so you've got to be big. They're the size of NFL teams, and that's just what they recruit. Bottom line is that what you're going to see is if Boise State's offensive line can't somehow control Ole Miss's defensive line, you know, it's a game, set, match. It really is. They've got to somehow slow down that defensive front, give Grant Hedrick time to throw the pass, the ball down the field, and to get some of the plays going, give Ajayi some room to run somewhere where he can make something happen. And that's the big thing. You hear about games being won or lost in the trenches, and I know it's cliche-ish, but that's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be a line play. BSU's offensive line versus their defensive front. Ole Miss has got a great defensive front. The Ole Miss is favored by 10, and I think right now, but rightly so.
Well, you've got Hugh Freeze of the Blind Side fame doing a lot of things. Let's talk a little bit more here at 580KIDO, what we can expect from the Broncos after this game. We've got, again, a revamped Mountain West. We've got the power conferences doing their own thing. Based on last year, how do you see this season playing out, or is it too soon to tell because we have a new coaching staff?
I don't know that it's too soon to tell. I think there's a lot of talent on the Boise State team, and Boise State's not a small team. They've got good size as well. So I just think it's one of those situations where they get by Ole Miss, and I'm not just saying win, even if it's just a tight, tough game. You know, nobody's expecting them to win down there. It's not going to hurt their season. But as long as they come out there with the confidence and the swagger that they need to have, a lot of people feel if they can get by Ole Miss, they're going to run the table this year. Now, I don't know that that's the case, but their season's more favorable. I mean, they've got BYU here, not there. They've got Fresno State here, not there. They've got San Diego State here, not there. Last year, they played a lot of tough road games, and they were in every one of them and could have won a lot more games. So they weren't that far away last year. So I think there's a lot of talent and a lot of returning talent and a lot of young talent that didn't play last year that are going to surprise some people when they see them.
When we talk about the program, you know, everybody thinks that it started in 07, but you have such a long line of success. And for me, really one of the unsung heroes, and it's hard to believe that because he has a building named after him, is Gene Blamire, who, you know, took what Southern Miss and Fresno initially started to do, anyone, anytime, anywhere, but figured out the system. And then, of course, unlike those teams, Boise State actually won. Your thoughts on the way the program has developed and evolved, so much so that many people believe the new rules in college football were designed in particular to keep Boise State from crashing the big dance?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people are thinking about that, but that could be a little paranoia. I don't know. It's just that those other leagues have always had the money. The five power conferences, whether, you know, the Big Ten or the SEC, the ACC, they've always had the money. And when you've got the money, you can do what you want. And, you know, the bottom line is that the Mountain West Conference, for as good as it is, top to bottom, it really is a good conference with solid football. If you take a look at their schedules, if you take a look at who they beat, they are barely playing with some of these teams, you know, the bigger leagues. So, yeah, you're still talking about the big boys thinking they're the big boys, and the bottom line is the scores still show that. So, BSU, I can't remember what their record is against the SEC, but it's like it's 2-5 or something like that. So, and yes, they beat Oklahoma, but if they had to play that schedule, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, every week and things like that, it wouldn't be the same thing. Boise State wouldn't have the run that it had. So the bottom line is those big – I don't think they're doing it just to keep Boise State out. I just think they're doing it because they can, because they've got the money, and it just keeps getting better. They got those big TV contracts that are huge. And when you've got that kind of money, you don't think about anybody else. You know, I don't think millionaires keep me out from becoming a millionaire, you know, because they want to keep me out. It's just they're not thinking about me.
Well, there are a lot of people from the power conferences that did quote the mid-majors by saying, look – we make the money. We have the expenses.
Yeah.
We should get the money back, as you've detailed. But you take a look at this program, and it is amazing how big it's become. It's even though the resources are very limited, you have East Coast Broncos. You have people in Mississippi that are Broncos. And think about it from this, again, relatively speaking, small stadium with a blue field. I mean, we have Eastern Washington now with a red field.
I remember when Gene decided to put in a blue field. And I have to be honest, I sat there and I went, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, you were with him all the way.
That's terrible. Yeah, I blue field, are you kidding me? Well, look where it's gone. I mean, you know, it just, and it's just, I think it's the color blue. I don't like Eastern Washington's red field.
You don't like the Inferno there?
I do not like the Inferno. It just doesn't have the same look or feel. But somehow, and it started, the magic started when they beat Oklahoma and got all the way there, and they beat Oklahoma, and all of a sudden there was magic there, and people all around them went, the little engine that could, you know, the little team that could, and they became, there's something about, you know, hey, I'm going to root for Boise State. I don't know anything about them. I live in, you know, I live in Boston, Massachusetts, but I love watching Boise State play because they play wide open football. They, you know, everybody thinks they have a lot of trick plays. Well, they don't, but the trick plays that they've used in the past have worked and have been amazing trick plays and amazing situations and have caught the imagination of people all around the country. So that's kind of what has happened. Then you throw in the blue field. I mean, everybody I talk to wants to see the blue field.
Right.
It's amazing. So they've just become kind of an icon in college football, and everybody knows that Boise State's going to be good.
Wayne DeZubak with us, Kevin Miller here at 580 KIDO. Finally, again, is every home in the Treasure Valley will be tuned in tonight to watch this game on ESPN. What do you think is going to be going on in the minds of people here? I mean, you know, it's kind of tough to say. I can feel the excitement. I can, whether you're a Bronco guy or not, I guess initially, and you've detailed it a little when you talked about the line play, but is there anything else? The quarterback play, how Ole Miss's quarterback plays. Remember a couple of years ago after Kellen Moore left, it was the defense that really carried the Broncos.
Yeah.
How's this year's unit look? You've been to many practices.
Well, first of all, you got Marcel Yates coming in there. Marcel Yates, now there'll be some people that said, you know, really at Texas A&M, they didn't have that great a defense. And in fact, their defense is something that's come under some strong, consternation right now, even for this year going into the season. But Marcel Yates is one of those guys. Again, he's a Boise State guy, played here, wants to be here, has the passion, knows the things. I mean, he's gotten some good ball players to come to Boise State. I think the defense will play very, very well and go out there a lot stronger. Now, some of the wide receivers for Ole Miss have thrown down the gauntlet. They said, boy, those defensive backs for Boise State are really little. We should have a good day. And, you know, you can say what you want, but they're right. That's true. They are little. Now, whether or not they're going to have a good day depends on how good they are. You can be 5'8", 5'9", and be awfully good not being 6'1". So we'll see how good they are. But, it would get me, if I was a defensive back for Boise State, I'd be kind of psyched up for that situation. You asked me about Ole Miss's quarterback. The thing I like about him is that, you know, he's a veteran. He's coming in here, but I love the fact that he's His name is Bo Wallace. You know, how better can you get to having a Bo Bob Wallace, you know, for Ole Miss? I mean, that's just perfect.
Wayne DeZubak, I know you'll be all over this.
Oh, we're having fun with it. It's, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, last year when Boise State lost four games, a lot of people came to the realization that, hey, we wanted these guys to play really tough teams, really great teams in great areas. So now they're in the Chick-fil-A Bowl. They're out there playing in this game tonight at the Georgia Dome against Ole Miss. It's the kind of game you wanted. They're not starting the season against Cal State Northridge. They're not starting the season against Sacramento State.
Right.
They're starting the season in a way, you know, that they should start the season. And I think people have come to realize that Boise State's not going to win every game,
right,
but just how good are they going to be and how effective are they going to be in the Mountain West?
And you do our sports reports for our sports station 630 The Fan. Mm-hmm. Is every fanfare going to be about Boise State today?
Actually not. We got high school football coming up tomorrow night. We got Napa Mountain View, so I talked a little bit about that. I talked a little bit about the Boise Hawks. There's still opportunity for them to make the playoffs, and people forget, you know. So, no, but I did lead with Boise State football.
All right.
You think that was a good choice?
I believe so.
Okay.
Wayne, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You're listening to 580KIDO. Let's get you to traffic.
Interesting conversation this morning.
Our government's trying every tactic possible to get us back in there. Morning, Kevin.
You can't really tell who you're training.
Good morning. How y'all doing? Does that sound pretty good here, Kevin?
That sounds incredible. It took me 10 years to master y'all.
Let's get it started.
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the Morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Here's kind of a crazy story. A human skull was donated to Goodwill. Now, we have a lot of wonderful charitable groups here in America today, here in the Treasure Valley. I don't think that any of our great nonprofits that do so much, whether it's the Good Samaritan Home, St. Vincent de Paul, the Boise Rescue Mission, the Idaho Food Bank, would really appreciate a skull being donated. But it happened in Austin, Texas. Think about that if you're one of the people that are going through the Goodwill pile and all of a sudden you see a human skull. What were you supposed to be doing that? What were you going to be doing there? What could you do with that? Could you sell it at a thrift store for Halloween? Maybe somebody had kept it for years. Who keeps a human skull? And one of the great reasons, another great reason to understand and appreciate why we live in Idaho, and this comes from the state of Georgia, which happens to be one of the more conservative states in the country, at least in some places. How would you like this, that if you sneeze in class, what do you say? Well, you say bless you, right? We have one professor who at the College of Coastal Georgia has banned students from saying bless you in class. That's right. According to rule number 6 of the physics class syllabus, students will be lowered. Students' grades will be lowered for saying bless you. We are taught that it is polite to say bless you when someone sneezes. However, if you say this while I am talking, it is not polite. It is very rude. And this is how crazy it is. Students could lose up to 15% of their final grade if you're disrupting the class by saying bless you. I don't think that would happen here in Idaho. We're joined by Miss Blue, Miss Orange, Linda from Emmett with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Kevin. That thing about the skull and the oh, that's funny. What kind of a sick sense of humor is that? What I called about was I'm a California transplant, so I really like the Broncos. And not that we didn't have good teams at the University of Buffalo, but they sure didn't hold a candle with these guys. And I have become kind of a football nut over the years. And
you're a football nut.
Oh, I love football. College football, pro ball. You wouldn't want to put a microphone in my house, though, because I can get yelling and screaming and using some rather naughty words.
Naughty Linda. Maybe that should be your new name, Naughty Linda.
Well, that's what you want to do. Go ahead.
I like that naughty Linda.
But, you know, I can remember back, oh, Lord, I don't know how many years it is now, when Lou Saban was coach of the Buffalo Bills. And they had their ups and downs, you know, each team does. But, man, he was a heck of a coach. And he got a lot of respect from his players, which I sadly say I think is lacking in not only in sports but in a lot of other areas in our colleges and high schools. And that psych professor, that professor in Georgia ought to be, and, you know, that's why penalize a kid for saying he bless you, you know. We could always go back to the old German word, Gesundheit, and then nobody really would know what you were talking about.
I suppose, so we found out your new name is Naughty Linda. Your new name is Naughty Linda.
Okay.
You're a football fan, and you want to say Gesundheit instead of bless you.
Right. It means the same thing in German, basically.
I want you to comment on this. Naughty Linda, tell me your reaction when you hear this. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Oh!
Oh, good Lord.
Do you find that soothing at all?
Well, you know.
Perhaps seductive.
I wouldn't touch that one with a 10-foot pole. I'm sorry.
Well, Naughty Linda from Emmett, we appreciate it.
Okay, Kevin, you have a good weekend.
You too.
Okay, dear. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, well, the weekend doesn't start till tomorrow. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller with you here. As we roll along, we're joined by our great friend Tom Munns, who we hear about all the time, and we always enjoy talking to him. Tom Munns, TomMunns.com, Tom Munns Facebook. We always enjoy having Tom with us. And, Tom, we have a very special guest with us this morning.
Yes, good morning, Idaho. Good morning, Kevin. Thanks for having me on this morning. Many of you know, I became the state coordinator for the John Birch Society, and rather than you guys hear me speak this morning, I wanted to introduce my regional field director of the 14 western states, Bliss II, and he's here to be able to speak to us about some of the issues that we do and some of the things that we're concerned about and some of the efforts that we have that we're moving forward with. So I'd like to introduce you to Bliss II.
Well, Bliss, thank you for joining us, and thank you for being here. What's your purpose for being here in the Treasure Valley?
Nice to be here, Kevin. Thank you. Well, of course, I'm here working with Tom Munns. One of the things that we're trying to do is familiarize people with the John Birch Society. We're a 55-year-old organization seeking to restore constitutional obedience by our Congress and helping to educate the electorate. We also are always involved in trying to maintain independence for our country from international entanglements. And so two of the things that we're working on right now is trying to educate Americans about some of the concerns over the possibility of our state legislatures applying to Congress to ask Congress to call an Article 5 constitutional convention for proposing amendments to our Constitution. And the other thing that we're really prioritizing right now on working with is talking to people about transatlantic partnership and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, which are kind of under the radar right now. But these are two international partnerships that our State Department's working on right now. And as I say, it's a little bit under the radar because they're not releasing the texts to these partnership agreements. The Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership would partner us with the superstate we call the European Union. And, of course, there's issues there over maintaining national independence. And so that's one of the things that we're working on right now.
How in danger are we of losing our sovereignty?
Well, it's a step-by-step process, and I think that the real indicator to look at is what happened to the nations of Europe. It was a 60-year process that evolved over time. It started out with, oh, we're going to have some free trade. Now we're going to have a community of nations that work together. They called it the European Community, and it finally ended up being what it was meant to be, and that was the European Union. So it went from trade and an economic union to a political union. So the trade union kind of precedes the political union, from economic union to political union. And there was a great plan on it. An excellent book on the topic is it's about 600 pages, written by two British men that were members of the European Union's bureaucracy, very scholarly book called The Great Deception. And it outlines for 600 pages how leaders in Europe worked together to deceive the peoples of their various countries, telling them, no, we're not going to move to political union, even as they moved them into a political union in a step-by-step treaty process. And again, that's kind of the route that we've been following on this continent. And the same people are behind it. The Council on Foreign Relations, for example, is a New York think tank that has promoted this in Europe and now promoting it here. And our first step in that direction was the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, back in 1992 to 94. That process was underway and finally concluded and was accepted. Then we moved into CAFTA, the Central America Free Trade Agreement, with six other nations. And then there was an attempt in 2005 to move us into a trade agreement with 34 nations, a 1,700-page agreement called the Free Trade Area of the Americas. And the John Birch Society launched a campaign to educate on that. We were able to get 11 state legislatures to pass resolutions to enjoin Congress to not pass the Free Trade Area of the Americas, so it was killed back then. Since then, communists have worked out a South American trade union between a number of the countries down there. So there is still unification going on between countries. It hasn't moved to a place of complete political unification, however, like is happening with the European Union, that now has its own European Union Parliament in Brussels and its own taxes for the European Union, so on.
The NAFTA agreement, certainly the great betrayal of the American worker, and we still see that. Why did our leaders do this giant transfer of wealth? Because we've seen the middle class erode, fueled by NAFTA, fueled by these trade agreements. These people that we send our jobs to, they still can't buy our goods. We buy their goods, but, you know, we've got a lot of unemployed Americans.
Well, we certainly do. It's been a great transfer of jobs, just like you said, Kevin. And I think we can go back and look at more than one agreement. Back in 1992, the Congress passed the Permanent Normal Trade Relations bill that normalized trade relations with communist China. And then after that, we also had a Most Favored Nation status bill passed that allowed us to see our companies move over to China, move their manufacturing over. And at the time, I worked for a large company that was a very old multinational firm that produced medical supplies, and they moved a lot of their manufacturing from New Jersey to China. And so those manufacturing jobs in America went bye-bye as they moved over to slave labor wages that decreased their costs of their products enough that they could even justify shipping it clear across the Pacific Ocean. And so we see a lot of that, but there's more to it than that, I think. China has been built into a great manufacturing country when it wasn't. Our technology's been transferred there. I used to work for Geneva Steel down in Orem, Utah, and well, it's actually Vineyard, Utah, right, just west of Orem. And it employed about 8,000 people during World War II to make plate steel to manufacture battleships and such. And it was built inland, so it couldn't be bombed easily by the Japanese. My father worked there, my sister worked there, I worked there. We all worked at the steel plant. It was a good job, good benefits, good pay.
You know, the people
good
that
retirement.
People that there's a nobility to those people that I think is lost in our society today.
Well, it was a wonderful place to work. I enjoyed the idea of being part of the manufacturing of steel that made girders and cars and tanks and everything else, cans to put food in, whatever.
Very different world from the keyboards and
very different. exciting in some ways to watch those big ladles of steel pour out, you know. And but they tore that plant down and moved it to China. It was sold to China for $40 million. That was after $156 million of improvements. So you have to ask yourself, what are we doing sending potential enemies our steel production facilities for cheap, on the cheap?
Well, how crazy is it that our fighter planes are built with Chinese parts?
Well, crazy. And you know, under, and I hate to say this, but under George W. Bush, an entire jet manufacturing plant from out in Ohio was shipped over to communist China. And so they bought it. And now, right now, if you look at China, they've got about $3.4 trillion in their sovereign wealth fund and in the debts that are...
Right. And what people don't know is that when you go to China...
By us to them.
Right. What people don't know is when you go to China... Part of the deal is no ticky, no punchy. You give them all your trade secrets. Like, yeah. I think Boeing has an agreement with them for 10 years, but they reverse engineer everything. Yeah. So when that agreement is done, Boeing's out and China has the technology.
Yeah. Well, it's just like during Bill Clinton's administration, mm-hmm. Loral and Hughes Corporation were allowed to transfer the technology for rocket and missile guidance systems so that satellites could be launched. But those same missiles that are used to launch satellites in China could be used to launch nuclear weapons. Now they have an excellent guidance system. Thank you, United States.
Yes.
So, you know, we're building the best enemy money can supply. But back to...
Well, let's hang on for a minute. Let's get the traffic, and we'll have more.
All right.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And we're back here. Bliss 2 with us, Regional Field Director John Burke Society, along with our friend Tom Munns. Bliss, let's get back to it, because we don't know how long we have. You know, this show, Kevin Miller, could be yanked because we have you on. Freedoms are taken away each and every day. What's the we laugh about that, but that is true. Shows like this are being yanked each and every day. Please tell me, with the remaining time we have left, what's the most important thing that we can take from our conversation?
Okay, well, we only have a few minutes, so this has got to be pretty quick. I would say, number one, to your listening audience, to get some in-depth information on what we're talking about today, visit our website, jbs.org, or go to our magazine, The New Americans website. It's thenewamerican.com, and you can read about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership and educate yourself about this. We need to have the conversation in the community, pick this up as a topic if we're going to stop it, and you need to stop it by 2015 or in that year. The other issue that we're looking at is trying to prevent the application by our state legislatures to Congress to have Congress call an Article 5 convention, a constitutional convention, for proposing amendments. Now, this also is a little bit of a complicated issue. It's only one paragraph in the Constitution. You have seven articles in the Constitution. Article 5 is how do you amend the Constitution. There's two methods, and for the last 225 years, our Constitution has been amended by Congress proposing amendments, passing it by two-thirds of both houses out to the states. Then the states have to ratify it by three-quarters of the state legislatures or conventions, if Congress chooses, for ratification. State ratification conventions have to ratify an amendment before it becomes part of our Constitution. Why are we leery of an Article 5 convention? Because it's to propose a multitude of amendments. It opens up the Constitution for potential of vast changes and some really dangerous potentials. And even though some are saying that, well, the 38-state threshold for ratification is a protection, well, we would tell you that the states have passed some bad amendments in the past. So I bet most of you don't like the 16th Amendment that gave you the income tax. Some of you, if you're astute and you understand what the 17th Amendment did to strip the states' legislatures of their power to elect these U.S. senators, would understand that the states lost a great deal of their power to check the federal government. So those are some of the ideas behind, you know, what can happen to pass amendments that are actually deleterious rather than helpful to us as a nation to maintain our freedom.
Did you say deleterious?
I did.
What does that mean?
It means a bad effect.
Okay.
You know, that they have a negative effect. At any rate, I would submit to you that you can find out a lot about, again, the Article 5 Convention and some of the dangers of it. I look at it like a Pandora's box. We won't really know what crawls out of it until you open it. And it's kind of a bloodless revolution to create new government. We can amend the Constitution through the Congress one amendment at a time instead of opening it up and getting dozens and dozens of amendment proposals at once. Again, go to thenewamerican.com and look up Constitutional Convention in the search engine there. It'll pull up 85 articles on five pages list, and you can look through those articles. One I recommend to you, probably the most important one for you to read starting out, is Working Together to Rewrite the Constitution. The article is, again, Working Together to Rewrite the Constitution, and it talks about how leaders on both the right and the left want to come together to open the Constitution up. But the John Birch Society is telling you this. The Constitution is the solution. It's not the problem. A return to the Constitution, an obedience and compliance with the Constitution by Congress would give us the repairs that we need. We don't
all
need
right.
to change it.
Bless, thank you.
Thank
it
you,
is,
Kevin.
It is 580 KIDO. Good morning, Dave. All right, join us tomorrow from the Spirit of Boise Balloon Classic. Once again, do appreciate you listening. Tell a friend. We'd love to be here for a while. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith.